I didn't hear you. I'm sorry.
Radio.
Everyone, and welcome to Beauty Talk. I'm your host, Denise Tennell, and I'm joined by my co-host tonight, Ms. Jennifer James. How are you, Jennifer?
I'm doing good, Denise. Hey, guys, what's happening? Hey, Denise, we miss you.
She's out there somewhere. She's probably not.
Hopefully she'll call in.
Yeah, she'll probably call in. Well, good evening, everyone, and again, welcome to Beauty Talk tonight, Thursday, July 29th. We're happy to have everyone with us, and tonight we have a very special guest, Mrs. Sarah Seidman Vance. I hope I pronounced that correctly.
Seidman,
that's what I thought. That's what I thought.
That's
anyway,
okay.
Sarah Seidman Vance. How are you, Sarah?
I'm doing wonderfully, thank you.
Great, great, and we have our good friend Suzanne Patterson on the line with us. How are you, Suzanne?
Hello, ladies.
Hi, and, Suzanne.
Hi, how are you doing?
Hi, Suzanne.
Hey, hello, everyone. Hi, Sarah. I'll see you tomorrow.
We're going to start with Jennifer with a little bit of beauty news, and then we're going to kick it back to Suzanne for her segment.
All righty, guys. Beauty news is very exciting for me today because I received a fabulous email from the also fabulous Miss Danessa Myrick, our legendary makeup artist and educator, who is debuting a new DVD called Fundamental Beauty. And
ooh,
she's going to actually do a giveaway for us where you can win the DVD before it is available to the public. So
oh,
you got to be listening later. We may have a couple more details. I'll be posting something on Twitter and in the chat room about how you can win Danessa's new DVD and her upcoming class and appearance schedule is also posted on the blog, and I'll be posting links to that too. So that's very exciting. A brand new DVD from Danessa Myrick is always awesome because they're so comprehensive, and education is really just priceless for the price of one little DVD. So that's great news.
So that's great.
Awesome. Yes. And all the makeup artists out there, we know that you're always interested in more and more education and training seminars. And Ket Cosmetics, they have a lot of upcoming appearances in several cities around the U.S., including San Francisco, California, August 2nd and 3rd, Tyrone, Georgia, August 15th and 16th, and Astoria, New York, August 23rd and 24th. And we will be posting links to Ket Cosmetics' schedule on Twitter, and Illusions Beauty will probably have something posted. And you can also go to ketcosmetics.com, K-E-T-T-Cosmetics.com, to get that full schedule.
Yes. I can't wait for that to come to it.
Yeah. Amazing. That's something a lot of people are kind of here and there about the airbrush, but if the industry is moving forward, then you have to move forward with it and get in on the game.
Yeah, Rocky Covetti with Ket, he has a great airbrush technique that I love. It actually saves you a lot of time and a lot of product. So I'm excited about that class coming, because I think I may just take it again.
Yeah, I'm going to definitely be in on that. So that's our beauty news for today.
All right. Did anybody get a chance to check out the Beauty Talk, the web series, the new sizzle for Beauty Talk?
Yeah, let's get some feedback on that. What's happening, chat room? I checked it out, and I'm overly excited for you guys. I'm so happy for you. It's going to be so fabulous.
Yeah, I can't wait. I'm still getting a lot of positive feedback on it, so I'm excited about it.
Great.
So if you haven't, go out to YouTube, check it out. I'll post a link in the chat room, and I'll post it on Twitter. So if you haven't seen it, you can check it out. Is that it for the Beauty News?
That is.
All right. I just want to say a quick hello to the wonderful ladies in the chat room. Coffee's there. Devin Cofield is there. Gorgeous Ingredients. Jen James Beauty, of course, that's you. And, of course, Technicolor. She's our ringleader. She starts all the trouble in the chat room.
And I love it. I love it.
And then we have a guest on the line as well. So welcome to the Beauty Lounge. So, Suzanne, what do you have for us tonight?
Well, let's see, our twice-monthly technology, HD technology and technique update. I sort of changed it up at the last minute because I wanted to talk about something that I see a lot in my aspect of video, and that's the eye light. This is an extra light that I've often seen thrown into a high-key or low-key lighting scheme. So, again, you know, we're talking about lighting, which is this is a great segue into Sarah's fabulous class coming up. So since much of the talents, emotions, you know, can be expressed through their eyes, it often becomes important that the eyes have a lighting dimension added in to be able to effectively portray their characters' emotions. And sometimes you can see this, you know, I've detected this light on some series and sometimes in movies. Actually, this is a small light that's not necessarily in line with the key light in a three-point lighting scheme, but it illuminates from the same direction. And sometimes it can be on or slightly above camera position. It supplements the key light in a way that elevates the overall three-dimensional look of the lighting with a better focus on the eyes. Often in three-point lighting, especially in a small studio setting. This is where I see it more in corporate videos as well, is that the brow bone, especially, and this is especially true with men, shrouds the eyes so that there's very little eye reflection back to the camera. So if the lighting happens to be dramatic with less fill light and the key light is angled more from the side, then there is definitely no light reflection from the eyes. You can see them, but camera sees them as just dull and lifeless and without any sparkle, and there's no reflection off of their surface to make the eyes look brighter. If you think about it, you know, the eye is a smooth, moist, rounded surface that reflects back what is shined on it. I mean, this is apparent, you know, you can be seeing someone outside and talking to them, and you notice that the sun catches their eyes in a way. And I usually say, "Oh, you have beautiful eyes." You know, it's really the reflection sometimes that really sets them off. So
yeah.
When a beam of light hits this smooth surface, it reflects back much like a mirror. If you look at models in magazine photos, for instance, you can almost detect this light with if you take a magnifying glass. A smooth edge or square rectangle reflection in the eyes usually means that they used a large rectangular silk or a soft light. If you see a tiny little sparkle, then that means that they've added a specific eye light. Even sometimes in close-up in movies, you can see this light reflection. So in a low-angle dramatic lighting, then the eye light would be set to the side of camera towards the key light to help bounce more illumination to the eyes for a bit more sparkle than the key light really can't do. So in a high-angle lighting, then the eye light will usually be placed higher in the shot to raise the sparkle so that it's just just in the eye above the pupil. So really, you know, I've seen a low-powered eye light that can really, you know, save a setup, you know, in a lighting setup. And the crickets are cricket. No.
you have
I'm just testing you guys.
Notes.
Are you? Huh?
You have to know we're all taking notes, even in the chat room. Everyone's taking notes.
Oh, you can always replay this. Come on.
Yeah, totally taking notes. That's true.
Trust me, we're listening though.
Well, it's, you know, it's something to you know, pay attention to. And I see it more often here, you know, and I'm just doing a lot of corporate stuff. I'm just doing a lot of government and military and all that kind of stuff. And you see that a lot in recording because especially with the guys, you know, if they've got a prominent brow bone, they just look completely lifeless in there. So a lighting guy that's really on the ball will kind of, you know, throw that in there. So, you know, for makeup, so my makeup tip for this is I really recommend that in HD that when you pick your color palettes that you don't pick palettes that are stronger than the actual eye color. You don't want your color palette to be stronger than the actual eye color. And in HD, remember that if you turn those darker colors, you know, if you measure them on the grayscale, camera will pick them up a half to, I think, a full step darker. They will resolute in camera almost a full step darker, so it's actually darker than what it appears to the eye. So I try to keep the eye palette colors, even the contour colors, just a half step above what the natural eye color is.
Wow, that's very interesting.
That's a great one. That's a great tip.
Well, it's a safe tip, really, especially for novice artists starting out. You know, just take a look and just don't choose your palette stronger than what you're working with in natural color, because then it can make really odd shapes. You know, people who have hooded eyes or drawn down corners and stuff, it can make them look really, really heavier and a lot worse. So it's just a good safety feature. So that's all I have for you. And next month, you know, that I come on twice a month. So next month we'll see you again on, I don't even have my calendar in front of me, but usually it's like the second and the fourth week. So
right.
Really enjoy it. And turning it over to the fabulous Sarah. She is amazing. She just has this wonderful, wonderful class coming up. So hopefully it's going to be a line to get into the class, right, Sarah? Because it should be.
I paid her to say that.
Okay, ladies, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Suzanne. Really
take care. Bye-bye.
Okay.
See ya.
Thank you, Suzanne. Thank you, Suzanne.
I really do believe you paid her.
Yeah. No, she's an incredible woman, a very encouraging woman. You know, she's like my biggest cheerleader. I love her to death.
And vice versa, you're her biggest cheerleader.
Oh, well, she's a neat lady.
Yes, she is. Yes, she is. And we all love her. So now, on to you, Miss Sarah.
All righty.
You ready?
I'm ready. Shoot.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are, where you come from, all that good stuff, and then just kind of walk us into it a little bit. You know, how did you start your makeup career?
Well, I'll give you a basic Reader's Digest version. I started actually in the business as a performer, as a kid. And my dad had been in vaudeville. If he were alive, he'd be, 98 right now, if he were still alive.
Wow.
He was an older father. He was 47 when I was born. So, anyway, he taught me makeup as a kid, and I did, you know, local theater, and then at 16 went away to the North Carolina School of the Arts to study opera, because that's where my voice was. I'm a trained opera singer. So,
okay.
I know. So, roundabout years of going to New York, trying to make it in opera and then musical theater and doing a lot of auditioning and singing in nightclubs with my sister, ended up coming back to Virginia where I originally grew up and eventually making my way down to Wilmington, North Carolina, still performing, but I fell into makeup. I was working on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, two. I had been working on, I didn't work Ninja Turtles 1 in the creature shop. I helped in Henson's creature shop as a turtle dresser. I put Donatello in his rubber outfit every day. Well, when, So when Ninja Turtles 2 came back to Wilmington, they decided to bring their entire team from England, and they didn't hire anybody locally. So I went in to work as a turtle stand-in, meaning I wore one of the heads and stood there in place for the turtles. Well, during this time, at the same time, I'm losing my mom to cancer. So Del Armstrong was brought in to do the makeup. Del had started with the Munchkins and the Wizard of Oz.
Mm-hmm.
So he'd been in the business a very long time. And through talking to him, turned out he'd known my dad from vaudeville.
Amazing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that was pretty cool. So we start talking, and he goes, well, Sarah, do you do makeup? I said, well, yeah, theater makeup. He goes, but would you like to come and do makeup for me a couple of weeks? We have all this background. We have to do all this nightclub stuff and face painting and things. And I went, well, yeah, but I can't lose the stand-in position as well because, you know, I'm losing my mom, and I need to be able to, you know, keep both, you know, keep my job. He said, don't worry, I'll make sure you can do both of them. And he did. And so for those 2 weeks I did makeup, he made sure I got in really early, did the background, then I ran to the next set, got grabbed the turtle head and stood there. And I got two paychecks for those 2 weeks, you know, not just for my stand-in, but for the makeup. Well, one thing led to another. A production manager saw what I did and liked it, and introduced me to several other makeup artists who liked what I did, and I ended up as a makeup artist. I happen to be really good at it, and also my mom was a painter and an artist, so I kind of really didn't have, you know, any choice in the matter. It was going to be something creative, but and the thing that I was really good at was corrective makeup. I was able to hide things, and you didn't know they were there, and so I really made my mark doing that. And so then I did, you know, worked it on the last three seasons of Matlock, the first three seasons and first four episodes of fourth season of Dawson's Creek. And I've been blessed to work on the animatronic horse team for Braveheart. I've had a real rounded makeup and special effects makeup career, and just been very blessed.
Your whole life. I mean, what an amazing resume / life story. Wow.
So let me ask you then, just really quickly. This really wasn't my next question, but I have to ask really quickly.
That's okay.
With I'm not sure what capacity you work now. But
right
now.
Go on.
I was just going to say, how do you see that the industry has changed? Like, what differences are there that you see?
Oh my gosh. Well,
I mean, and besides, not even touching on the HD part of it.
Oh, there's for makeup artists, you know, not even just besides being HD, although that is part of it.
Mm-hmm.
We have a harder job now to
yeah.
make sure our work is flawless. And it doesn't matter whether if you do regular application or you do airbrush, because if you're bad at airbrush, it's still going to show.
Yes.
You know, and that's you know, with Dawson's Creek, we shot 16 millimeter, and then it was put to, you know, video. It was filmed to video. And we could get away with a whole lot more because it's 16 millimeter, it's a high grain. So I was very easy to make a 21-year-old man look 16, because I could put heavier makeup on him to hide that beard, you know, doing the beard cover and then putting the base over it. And because it was so grainy, I got away with murder. HD, you can't do that. There's no way. You can't even get away with that anymore. It doesn't exist. So everything has changed, you know, as far as the industry is concerned, and how it's grown and how we do things.
Yeah.
Was that it? Did I answer your question, or did
that,
I?
Yeah, that answers my question. Yep.
Okay, good.
So, speaking of the HD, let's just jump right into it. What makes you an expert at it?
That's what I do every single day. I work at I'm hearing a funny beeping noise. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm
Hello?
Here.
Okay.
Yeah, we're
That's
here.
Weird.
We're here.
Sorry, it's a very strange beeping noise. Anyway, I work at the Christian Broadcasting Network for the 700 Club 5 days a week. I work in the mornings, and I do live HD broadcast every single morning.
Wow.
and I've been doing it for the last 9 years.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I had been blessed enough with all the friends that I have in the industry when HD cameras came out to play with them before I even got to, you know, to where we had to use it. Because when I first started at CBN, it was still regular analog to digital. And then
right.
we moved into digital, and then we moved into HD when everybody else did.
Right.
But I already had, I was, like I said, I was already blessed to have that advantage that I'd already been playing with the camera, and working with 70-millimeter film is very similar because that's an unforgiving film. You can see mm-hmm. everything, you know, because everything's huge.
Right.
So
right.
that's, you know, and I developed a technique with using regular makeup application because I find I work faster that way. And because of the years of the film work, doing, you know, four of us having 200 extras and having to get them out in less than 2 hours in 1940s
right.
hairdo and makeup. So,
right.
Yeah, so I've learned to work with speed, and there's been many a time that some of my talent will come in at 6 minutes till and I have to blow dry their hair and get their makeup on and powdered as they're going down the hallway.
Mm-hmm.
To get them to live broadcast. And I have to get it right the first time because I don't get a chance to fix it.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah.
Sometimes during commercials, yeah, if a hair's out of place or whatever, you run in and do that. But as far as the makeup, once it's on and you've set it, that's it. And you have
yeah.
to get it right. You don't have a choice. So I actually had them redo all the dressing rooms so that they were painted white, and they all are fitted with daylight bulbs, so
mm-hmm.
that the color that I put on the talent is pure, so that if they have to make a transition, which has happened, where they go from the interior studio outside, the makeup's going to work in both venues.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot to think about, a lot to manage.
And that's something that we also have to do, like in film, like when you're in the makeup and hair trailer, you have
mm-hmm.
to come in, have to change that lighting, you know, so that it's right. But
go on.
No, I was just going to say, that's something that makeup artists, we really need to start thinking about that, you know, and a lot of times we may even need to start taking our own lights to our jobs so that, you know.
Well, most definitely. One of the things that I'm going to be doing with this lighting class is I'm putting the students in a horrible lit situation, but having them to train their brain and their eye to know what they're looking at and what it's going to look like when they step on the set. Having them walk in to see the lit area, see how it's lit, then turn around, take them into a poor lit area. How many times have we gone in and the dressing room they stuck us in had one incandescent bulb hanging from the ceiling?
Yeah.
A lot. You know, if we don't have a trailer, if we go into a situation where there's not a trailer and that you get thrown into some weird room or you get thrown into a gymnasium where, you know, where there's nothing but, you know, huge fluorescent lights that aren't balanced in any way, and you have to figure it out how that's going to work. And part of that in the class is to teach them to train their eyes to know what they're putting on in a badly lit situation, to know what it's going to look like when they step out and put them into
right.
the correct lighting situation. There's too many makeup artists out there that forget this part. This is important. It's extremely
yeah.
important, because if we don't know this and we don't have this knowledge, I hear too many times, lighting ruined my makeup. Did you talk to them? Well, no. Did you, you know, look at your talent on the monitor ahead of time, and if you need to make adjustment, did you do that? No.
Wow.
Well, then we got to talk, you know. I mean, and this is
right.
not uncommon. It's not uncommon to see, and I've heard it a lot, which is what prompted me to put this class together, because I did take lighting. I took that when I was at the North Carolina School of the Arts, because I was the youngest in the opera department, and they wouldn't let me sing my first year because I was still in high school. So I took elective classes, and one of them was lighting, and I worked on the crews for the operas in the lighting department, which was, you know, I did not know that years later that was going to be something that was going to be a humongous benefit for me.
Yeah, great. That's great experience. That's why I always joke. Every time I'm on a movie, I always joke, we should have a career day, and everybody, you know, or at least one person from each department switch departments. so that we all appreciate what other departments are doing.
Because ADs don't know what we do.
They definitely don't know what we do. I don't, yeah, definitely.
What do you mean you need last look? Oh.
Right. No, what do you mean you need more time?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Didn't you get it done in the trailer? Yeah, but
right.
You changed everything.
That's interesting, Denise and Sarah. Do you think has anybody ever pursued anything like that happening with the unions and everyone?
Well, you know, it's something I have talked with many educators in like film schools. Going, there needs to be a class that they go and experience everything from the other departments.
Yeah,
kind of like that show they have, which is with the bosses, Undercover Boss, where the heads of these huge companies have to go and work with the regular workers to find out actually how their company works. I think the
right.
same thing should happen on a film set.
Yeah, mm-hmm. definitely.
I really do.
Although nothing like that has ever happened, nothing's stopping you from asking questions. Nothing.
Exactly. Exactly.
And these people love to tell you what they do. Trust me.
They love to talk on and on and on. Absolutely.
Exactly. And my other big thing is that a lot of makeup artists do not remember their color theory.
No.
They have no idea. You know, that's the other thing. We're going over color temperature because the color temperature affects what the makeup's going to look like. If they put gels in, it's going to affect what the makeup looks like. Reflection off the set, if it's got orange-colored wood, that bounces off and changes your color. The clothes that they're wearing, it's like so many of them don't take all of this into account when they're doing their work, and they have to.
I think it's not just
about what we're putting on their face.
Definitely. And to be a good makeup artist, at least like when you're in film and, you know, you have your department head and you have your key or however they want to break it down.
Mm-hmm.
To be a good makeup department head, and just even if you're working as a third makeup artist, there's nothing wrong with you going to set before, you know, the actors come in to see what that set for the day, what that set looks like. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing
exactly.
wrong, of course, with you going to the wardrobe department and looking to see what they pulled for that actor for each scene. There's nothing that, I mean, that's what you're supposed to do.
Right, and that should be in when they're doing their continuity photographs and stuff, that should all be in there. You know, don't just get the head,
Absolutely.
And the clothes. You know,
Absolutely.
and a lot of that stuff is forgotten or they're not worried about. You know,
right.
And that bothers me. I want to see makeup artists not just want to be red carpet makeup artists or be quote unquote celebrity makeup artists, because I hate that term.
I'm so glad you said that. Can I please hug you through the internet? I'm hugging you.
Yes, you can. I hate that term. I'm a makeup artist that has done celebrities, but I'm not the celebrity. And
when I hear that,
that's what it makes me think, and it bugs the snot out of me.
I agree. Oh, my.
Bugs me. So when people go, oh, are you a celebrity makeup artist? No, I'm a makeup artist that's done celebrities, and I will correct them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they kind of look at you and you go, I'm like, that's what I want, you know, if you're going to refer to me as anything, preferably Sarah, you know, call me Sarah, but, you know, don't call me celebrity makeup artist. I don't like it.
We don't want anyone to bug the snot out of her, please.
Yeah, that's right. Can you tell I'm from the South?
Oh, God, hilarious.
I'm still hugging her. I'm sorry. I have to take a
moment. I can feel it all the way over here.
Oh.
Okay. So, I mean, basically, so, you know, working 5 days a week for 9 years, the same place, day in, day out, with HD, I mean, yes, we can say that you're an expert.
Yeah. And the Jewish Jesus that we shot was all shot in HD as well. That was scary because I was having to do crucifixion effects makeup in HD. They couldn't see any lines. It had to look right.
For those people who may not know what you're talking about, explain to them what that was all about.
Oh, the Jewish Jesus was a project that was sponsored by Christian Broadcasting Network to be shown as a special in the 700 Club. It was set up in three segments, and Suzanne and I were nominated for a National Daytime Emmy for that project. And we've been blessed to win seven other awards for the same project. But that, I have to say that was it was very scary. I had tons of beard work to do. And then we had, the, you know, Suzanne came to assist me for the crucifixion makeup because I knew I needed somebody that knew what they were doing. They wanted me to hire somebody local. I went, no, I'm bringing in Suzanne. She knows what she's doing. And I needed someone that I could just turn to. And she was incredible. I would just go, Suzanne, I need, and it was in my hand. I completely swear to you, she knew. And it was phenomenal. She's just phenomenal to work with.
Nothing like working with an ultimate, consummate pro like that.
Oh, thank you. It would not have happened like it did without her. It really would not have. I can't say it enough how blessed I was to have her with me.
So I'm kind of getting an inkling that some of the makeup artists listening that may be in the chat room or maybe some of the guests, because this is something that I'm kind of wondering. If we feel like we have sort of an edge over the people that you may have just discussed with color theory and being able to think ahead and knowing exactly what our role is, A to Z on set,
mm-hmm.
how do we stick our little foot in the door?
Yeah. Wait, say that again. I've got a ring in my ear. Something's going on with the phone. Say that last part again.
I was saying how a lot of us are thinking, because I'm thinking this, we may believe or we may even have, you know, all the attributes that you said were kind of missing in some of the people that get hired
right.
on set
uh-huh.
about the color theory and having the consciousness and the readiness of mind to be aware of all the things, including the wardrobe and the lighting and all that. We want to know how we get some of those people fired and take their places.
Oh, wow.
So basically, are you saying, like, how do you get to work on movie sets, on film sets?
Well, I can tell you, yeah, I guess that's what she's asking. For me, each person comes up in a different way. I mean, the first time I got on a film set was I worked as a background talent,
mm-hmm,
right. as an extra. And I started hanging out over it with the makeup people and asking questions. Now, sometimes you're going to get some, and this part is sad to me, that won't talk to anybody. They want to keep it a secret. Yeah, but that's not how I work, and I won't ever work that way. I cannot take it with me, and I have been blessed in my life to work with people like Steve LaPorte. Steve LaPorte is the most giving man you'll ever meet. He was the head makeup for Lost, and I worked with him on My Fellow American. And I was there as just a makeup third and background makeup. And he never made any of us feel that we were any less than he was at all. I mean, he's that's what I aspire to be as a makeup artist. When someone asks me a question or wants to know, I want to give that knowledge. And I find that I get real interested in people that really want to ask questions. Not somebody that's talking to me sweet and nice just to, you know, to blow sunshine up my skirt, but to, mm-hmm. that really, really wants to know. Those are the people that I will look at again. They'll go, hey, you know what? I think I want to bring them on as an intern. Or, hey, bring them on in background so they can kind of get their feet wet and then work with me. And that for me, that's what I look for. It all depends. Mm-hmm. Each person looks for something different. Some people, and I've worked with makeup artists like this, that will hire people they know can't compete with them, which I find sad.
Yeah.
That you've all worked with them. But the ones I find the most pleasure are the ones that say, here, this is what I need, and they know that I'm going to be able to give it to them and that I'm not there to steal their job. That's the biggest thing. When you're on a set, and the sad part is, and it all happens, we all know this, there's the gossip and the backstabbing. I want to work with people that I know that when I leave the set, one, they're not going to talk about me, and two, I'll be backed up. That if my people are being covered, they're going to really cover my people.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, because we've all worked on sets where we've walked away and our people weren't tended to because somebody wanted our job.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's there. It's out there. And that's sad. So I don't, that's, I want to be able to feel comfortable, but I also want whoever's working with me, I want them to know what they're doing. And if they don't, be willing to be teachable.
Right.
If you're not willing to be teachable, then there's something wrong, because we're supposed to be learning until the day we die.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So. Absolutely.
Have I preached enough?
Keep going.
We've got a couple of other little topics you can preach on a little later.
Okay. So
share with us, like, what are some of the challenges that you see in working in high def?
Woof. Sunburn. One of the things, because most, you know, all the makeup we all use, whether we use airbrush or we use regular cream makeup, is transparent to translucent. So the natural skin tones are going to shine through. With HD, the biggest problem with HD is the reds pull stronger.
Right.
Right.
You know, so it's like you put a pink lipstick and all of a sudden this pink is looking red on camera. So you have to be real careful when you're putting color on what that's going to translate to. And so when I do my blushes, if you look at one of my talent in the room, it doesn't look like it's heavy at all. It looks very light because I know once she steps on that set, it's going to pull forward. The blush is going to look heavier. So I do it for knowing what the camera's going to do to it, so that it looks like a normal blush by the time she gets to set. Whereas if you saw her in the dressing room under the daylight bulbs, it would look like just this natural, you know, just a wisp of color in her cheek. But it's not really. Once we hit camera, poof, there it is. So
right.
Go on.
I'm saying that's why the monitor has to be your boyfriend on set.
Yeah, but you know, if you're working on like live broadcast like I do, your best place to see it is in the control room behind the colorist, the videographer. He's also your best friend. You know, there's been some times where I've had somebody sunburnt and he's got the ability, you know, I've done what I can and I can only go so far in correction, because when you do too much correction and then you put the base over it, then it looks thick. So you're limited. You're limited in with your correction because of how fine the detail is. But there is an upside as well. One thing the colorist can do for you, the Sony cameras, and I'm sure the Red has it too, but the Sony cameras have a computer program in them now that they can actually digitally find the face and take the detail out of the face, but leaving the detail everywhere else except for the face. Older women really love this. So some things you can get away with. But, you know, like I said, with the sunburn, so I can go in, I can go to my colorist and go, hey, he's sunburned. I've done what I can without him looking like, you know, I've made him look like a mummy.
Mm-hmm.
And he can go in and tweak the color and pull some of the red down, you know, bring in more cool color to make my talent look less sunburned.
Right. Awesome.
You know, with what I've done with the correction, because the correction still has to be there or he can't do his job.
Right.
Because if he's making the adjustment and he adds the cool, I still have to have that, you know, the yellow that's underneath the base to counteract that red. But there has to be enough there so that he can work with it when he's changing the color.
And you can actually see it if you watch some TV shows, if you really, like, look. You can actually see where he has done his job. Because you can see it. That's all I'm saying. It's looks animated sometimes, but they do a fine job, but you definitely can pay attention and actually see where this guy comes in to be your best friend.
Exactly. And the funny part is you'll see changes between the talent's one camera, the single camera, and then when you go to the two shots, you'll see a slight difference. Because you can't always adjust it in the two-shot because the camera software can only work for one individual on camera at a time.
Right.
So it only works for single shots. So two shots, you want to pull back as far as you can. But between him and your lighting designer, they're your best friends. If you have a talent that has sunken eyes, and you know you can light from here to tomorrow, but if I don't give them the highlight, they can't bounce the light off of it.
Right.
So I have to be friends with my lighting designer as well. Film set, be a DP. And I got to know what I'm talking about. I got to know where I see, you know, where is that light coming from? Wait a minute, that's that Fresnel back there, you know, or wait, you've got that Leco. Can you, you know, put another scrim in that Leco to help me out? And, you know, if you got a DP or lighting guy that you've worked with for a long time, you can have that rapport. And the between the two of you or the three of you, you can make a really pretty picture.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why also it's important, I think I mentioned this last week, for makeup artists not to just go into a job and just, you know, planning the attack of how they're just going to, you know, make this model or actress or whoever look glamorous and just go for it, but really
right.
take the time to analyze that person's face before you do anything.
Oh, most definitely.
Really, you have to, I mean, if you're going to plan an attack on that face, you really have to think about what that camera is going to see.
And the creative direction, big time, you have to pay attention to where the creative direction is saying you're supposed to go.
Exactly. If they block the commercial or they block the show ahead of time, then you have an advantage because you can see how that talent's moving through the lights and where you might see there'd be problems or see, ooh, that light really shades her funny over there. What can I do to balance that out? And then, you know, or say, hey, did you see how her face changed over here? Can we do anything about that? If not, then I will take that care of that.
Right.
So yeah. So there's got to be a give and take in all of that. And
right.
I mean, I agree with you wholeheartedly on that.
And just plan to go to set and you know and being ready to make adjustments if you have to.
Yeah. Exactly. Don't have everything sitting in the makeup room and you have to run back to it. Always take.
Right.
You know, if you're on the set, you know, it's something where you're stopping down a lot, especially with commercials or shows that don't go straight through, you know, that are taped live, but then go to, you know, are from live broadcast to tape, where you have an advantage to be able to go in and fix things. Keep a palette with you. You know, a small one, something that you know, and if you're blessed enough to have them set up actual area where you can set up where you've got lights and everything, then do it. Take advantage of that.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you, do you airbrush? Because you mentioned something about airbrushing earlier. Do you airbrush?
I do airbrush, but I'm not as good at it as I am at cream application. And,
okay.
And one of the things that I've gotten very good at is using the cream makeup, but it looks like it's airbrushed.
Right.
Because I stipple the color on.
So tell us, which creams do you use or do you like to use?
Well, see, I'm one that doesn't stick with just one. It depends on the colors. It depends on how it works on people's skin.
Right.
I've been using Gerda Spillman for years, mm-hmm. but I've also started using the Graftobian here and there. And getting to work with that and learning how that works. Years ago, it used to be Viseora, but Viseora got sold and Borghese bought it and the palette changed to where you'd start out with one color at the beginning of the palette. By the time you got to the bottom of the tin, it had changed complete colors. It would go orange.
Mm-hmm.
It was not mixed well or blended well, and so I stopped using that. There, if a talent wants something specific, like I've had talent that's wanted MAC makeup, which is fine, but there's been a couple times where they've had the MAC, and I've had, because the palette's been established by what the key, or I've got everybody else in the Gerda, where I will actually take a little bit of the Gerda, mix it into the MAC, still giving them the texture they want with their MAC, but also pulling them into the palette that I've set up.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And sometimes you have to do that, you know, and it's a lot of times you'll see where that's not done. You'll see on a television show, you'll see two different talents come in, and you can tell who's got the MAC makeup on and who doesn't.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you really can. I mean, it's gotten better over the years, but early on, the Caucasian colors would pull yellow and the ethnic colors would pull orange.
Yep.
And they looked so plastic. It, you know, now it's gotten a lot better, but when they originally came into the picture, it wasn't. But, you know, that's the thing. everybody's brands that are coming out now, they're a lot of them are being designed for what we have to use them for. So I have eyeshadows from this company and eyeshadows from that company, and it's what the colors does and if it works on certain people's skin. For instance, I cannot use the Gerda Spillman on one of my talent's skin. He's out of two people I've ever done in the last 20 years, this talent breaks out in hives when I put the Gerda on them.
Oh, wow.
It's so rare because nobody ever breaks out. So what I do is I actually mix RCMA. Now, we all know that's a heavy makeup, but what I've done is that I blend, when I blend the two colors, I end up using an Olive 2 and the KT3. But it's only a dab of the KT3. It's more of the Olive 2. This person's very fair but has rosacea. So mm-hmm. I mix it, but when I'm mixing it, I mix it, almost pulverize the snot out of it, because you can with the when you're mixing the colors, when you pull them out of that the little pod, you can make that creamier and make it work for you and thin it out, and
mm-hmm.
that's what
right.
I do. So that and I've mixed it so it matches, because everybody else is wearing the Gerda where I'm working right now.
Gotcha.
So by mixing that and then pulverizing the snot out of that makeup, I've been able to make it work, and still by using the stippling technique to make my talent work with all the rest of them, even though that particular person cannot wear the Gerda Spillman. And you're going to find that. I cannot physically wear the, not the airbrush, but the regular cream makeup by Graftobian, because I'm allergic to wool and it contains lanolin. So, and that's not everybody. That's another thing that I, you know, I stress when I teach my classes, is ask the people if they have any allergies. If somebody's allergic to
right.
wool, you do not want to stick something on them that has lanolin in it, or they're going to be a mess. And you're going to have
uh-huh.
to, if you have to work with them more than one day, the next day you're going to have a real big problem with broken out and swollen skin.
Right. Now this next question is kind of like a two-part question. One,
okay.
which do you prefer, film or high def? And then, I can just about imagine what you're going to say, but, and then, is there anything great about using high def in your opinion? Like, if, let's just say we're stuck with HD forever, like, you know, can we learn to like it?
Basically, we're not going to have a choice. However,
right.
the upside, like I said earlier, that the cameras are now being designed with software so that they can take the detail out of the face for older women and older men if they don't want to look old. What do I prefer? I like them both for different reasons. Depending
okay.
on the film, if you're shooting, you know, it really depends. I one thing I love that I like about film is that when you're on a film set, there's always something different going on. There's different things to do. You know, you get to change up things. Where I'm working right now, and I'm love my job, but there's not a lot of it can be monotonous. So it's hard to say. We're stuck with HD. Everybody loves a pretty picture, and with the HD, now that we're moving into 3D.
Right.
And we get to see everybody's faces really close up. it's not going away. HD isn't going away. The pictures are too pretty. Everybody loves the brilliant colors. They love to see the nature and, you know, as if they're standing there. And, again, now with the 3D, that's even going to be a tougher job.
Mm-hmm.
So we better get good at the HD, because once we move into more 3D,
right.
The intensity is going to be there because of they like to do the 3D to make people look like they're right in your face. They're going
right.
to be in our face. We will see everything.
Exactly.
Where at least right now with the television, the way it is, HD is far enough away that unless you're right up on your screen or they do it, you know, an ECU, an extreme close-up, you know, you still have an advantage of not seeing everything. But
mm-hmm.
it's coming. It's coming.
Yeah.
That, you know, that's... Yeah, it is, and we just got to be. We have to be ready for it. If you're good at airbrush or if you're good at cream, be good at one of them. Don't be
mm-hmm.
halfway with one or the other.
Right, absolutely.
I do airbrush, but that's not where I'm gifted, and you know I'm fine with that. It doesn't bother me. Where my giftings are is with regular makeup application, and I've developed the stippling technique with layering color. To appear as if it's been airbrushed, and I work very quickly with it. And, you know, I've got it in my hand, so.
Since you recognize that that's not your strength, would you be willing to go to High Def University and take a class with Suzanne Patterson?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and we've played with stuff while I'm there when she's teaching the airbrush. That is just something that's not...
That was really a joke, Sarah. But you can go ahead and answer it.
I didn't hear the laugh out loud behind it. But no, oh gosh, yeah. I mean, I took classes with Dynair 100 years ago. Which, side story, the one of the girls that was in the class with me, it turned out to be the wonderful lady that started Ket Cosmetics because of our conversation at lunch, because we hated the class was not very good and we were like very unhappy. And and she developed Ket from that class and our conversation.
Wow.
So, yeah. And, you know, wonderful lady. But no, it's just not. It just isn't my gifting, you know. I wish it was, but it's not, you know.
Mhm. And I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, it's nice that you know how to do it, and that's what I suggest to all makeup artists. You know, at least learn how to do it.
I have an airbrush system here. You know.
Yeah. So you know, something that you love to do. You know, just at least try it.
Yeah.
Because you never know.
Oh, exactly. You know, and every day, you know, I get my daughter over here and I guinea pig her all the time.
Right.
You know, and so that I can get better at it. But I really have developed the speed and accuracy with the cream application and the stippling technique that I've developed for it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's where I'm good. And that's, you know, when I teach that part, that's what I teach. I would never stand up and try to teach airbrush. That is not my gifting. Yeah, I can show you how to take apart the gun and clean everything out. And, you know, whether it's a single action or double action, you know, I have all that knowledge. But, and you can have knowledge, but if you don't have the gifting, it doesn't work. So that's why I tell makeup artists, if you're good at airbrush, get to be really good at airbrush. If you're good at cream application, be good at that. Because whatever we do, whether it's airbrush, whether it's cream application, everybody's going to see what we do. If we leave streak marks or if we layer too much color with the airbrush, you're going to see it.
Absolutely.
So it's be good at one or the other. Or if you can be good at both, excellent.
Be good at both, right.
Excellent.
Right.
So
how did you meet Suzanne Patterson, and then how did the whole High Def University come about?
Wow.
Just your whole relationship with HD. How did that come about?
It's funny because how I met Suzanne, I had got a phone call. This is 4 years ago now. I'd gotten a phone call from a gentleman needing a makeup artist for 3 Democratic hopefuls. And I said I was available, and he said, well, you were suggested by Suzanne Patterson. I said, who? and he said her name again. And so when I got on set, I said, do you have her number? I would love to call and thank her. Really, I wanted to know who this person was. I had no idea. And so I called Suzanne up, and I thanked her, and we started talking. And in the middle of the conversation, I said, how do you know me? And we went through every film, everything that we'd done, and we still, to this day, cannot figure out how she knew my name.
Wow.
No idea. So, but, we started talking, and we actually spoke on the phone for a year, back and forth, talking about makeup, talking about, and she said, she started watching what I did, at Christian Broadcasting Network, called me up and goes, are you airbrushing? I said, no. She goes, well, your work looks like airbrush. And that's when the discussion started about me teaching what I do and her teaching what she does together. She came up with the name for High Definition University and establishing the whole thing and as me coming in as a guest instructor. And and it was out of those conversations, you know, with her that she came up with the idea that there really needed to be a central place set up where everything was geared for that. You know, Suzanne teaches many other things, but she also wanted to have it so there was a central area to be teaching just the stuff that had to do with high definition. So that was Suzanne's baby, and she birthed it out of our conversations. And the first time I physically met her was when she came to work with me on the Jewish Jesus.
Oh, okay. Oh, wow.
Yes, that's when we physically met, and it was wonderful. She came up my walkway, and we just hugged like we had known each other forever. And that's the cool thing about Suzanne, is that we feel like we've known each other forever, and we've only known each other for 4 years and still don't know how she knew my name.
Wow. You're connected with blood.
Yeah. She's fantastic and one of the most giving women you'll ever meet.
Wow.
Great story.
Yeah, nice. So that's how all of that happened and how High Definition University came to be.
Well, great. Well, Sarah, we're coming to an end. I'm so sad.
I can't believe this. Wait a minute.
I feel like you have more to share.
Well, I've had a blast.
We're going to have to give you back for a part two.
Okay. I'm okay. Easy, but I ain't cheap. Well, tomorrow I leave for D.C. to go up and teach the Lighting for Makeup Artists 101, and I'm very excited about this class.
Yes, give us more details.
It's going to be a whole lot of information. I'm hoping I don't flood their brains with too much, but, you know, a lot of it's going to be stuff. Some of it's going to go over their heads, and some of it, when they get into a situation, it will be an aha moment for them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, be like, oh, that's what she meant, you know, slap the forehead. So I'm very excited, and you know, I'm looking forward to taking this class, you know, to other places if the opportunity arrives, so that I can share this with as many makeup artists as possible.
Right. Well, we love it.
Cool.
So in that area, please, please go and take Sarah's class, and you can find the details on her website
at sarahseidmanvance.com.
And I think Jennifer posted that in the chat room, I believe.
I did.
Yeah, I think she did. Yeah,
well.
Yes, she did.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, great,
awesome.
Great. So, Sarah, we have one last question, and we have like 3 minutes left. So if you can just tell us quickly so then Jennifer can give us more details on the giveaway.
Yes, ma'am.
But it's going to be interesting, and hopefully you'll do it. But what is beauty to you? But you have to sing it for us.
Vaudeville style.
Oh, my gosh.
We'll accept operatic, too.
You caught me off guard. I'm not prepared.
Okay.
But I will next time. Next time I'll sing for you.
When you come back, you'll have to sing.
I will sing for you, I promise. Beauty to me. There's beauty everywhere. The motto I have on my website, it's not about beauty. It's about the illusion of reality. But it's also about taking what God has created and enhancing it.
Yeah.
That's
beautiful.
That is exquisite. Lovely.
Well said. Well said. Now, Jennifer, you have like a minute and a half. Can you give us quickly details on the giveaway?
Yeah, I'll take less time than that. You can win a Danessa Myrick Fundamental Beauty DVD, not available to the public until next month. Follow Illusions Beauty on Twitter. Follow Danessa Myrick on Twitter. Follow Jan James Beauty on Twitter. And go to my blog and post a comment telling why you should win. And Danessa will also be letting Illusions Beauty know how they can give one away, too, later down the road. So if you want to win that DVD, follow those people. Hop on my blog and comment, and we're giving that away August 5th.
And give us the web address for your blog.
It is jenniferjamesbeauty.blogspot.com.
All right. jenniferjamesbeauty.blogspot.com.
That's it.
All right. We want to thank you all for joining us in the Beauty Lounge. Thank you, Jennifer, for joining me. And thank you again, Sarah, for being our guest. And we can't wait till the part two of the discussion.
You're very welcome.
We have a whole bunch of questions to ask you.
Oh, thank you for having me.
I wanted to get into the corrective makeup because I had a couple of questions about how you cover tattoos and
oh, cool,
all kinds
okay.
of stuff I wanted to ask. So Yeah, we'll just wait till next time. And can you join us next week?
Yeah, I could.
Will you
join
us next week?
She asked me to join you next week.
Yeah, will you?
I said, yeah, I could.
Yeah,
hello?
You could, but I mean, will you?
Oh, yes. Well, okay. I was like, yes.
Well, thank you, Sarah, so much. So Sarah will be back next week. So please come with all of your questions prepared for Sarah. We're just going to freestyle it and ask Sarah as many questions as we can. Thank you very much, everyone, for joining us on Beauty Talk. Have a good night.
Thanks, Sarah. Thank you, guys. Thanks again, Illusions Beauty, for having me.
Oh, thank you, guys. It was a blast.
Yes, we'll see you guys next week.
All right.
Thanks, Denise.
Bye, Denise.
Bye-bye.
Bye.